Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and happy Christmas to all those celebrating. Welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, covering the launch of the See It, Name It, Change It campaign in the city of Kingston.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
Kingston community organizations are working together to address intimate partner violence in KFLNA through a new awareness campaign. See It, Name It, Change It is an educational campaign encouraging community members to learn to identify harmful behaviors, call them out, and take safe, effective action. The working group behind the campaign came together in 2024, after City Council declared intimate partner violence an epidemic in the region in 2023. The group is comprised of Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence Coordinating Committee, Kingston Interval House, Resolve Counseling Services, Kingston Anti-Violence Advisory Council, Southeast Public Health, the City of Kingston, and United Way, Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington. The local campaign features photographs of Kingston community members holding signs with the campaign slogan. The photographs, taken by local photographer Will O'Hare, feature an Indigenous elder, a musician, a paramedic, the medical officer of health, a trades worker, the local Canadian Forces Base Commander, a Correctional Services Canada Commissioner, an artist, and a Queen student. See It, Name It, Change It launched in conjunction with the Global 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence, featuring the images and resources on social media and local digital displays. Ruth Nordegroff, Director of Community Development and Wellbeing and IIDEA at the City of Kingston, sat down with CFRC to share more about the campaign. For listeners who may not have heard of it yet, what is the See It, Name It, Change It campaign, and what is it aiming to do?
It's actually a campaign that was initially created in the Lanark County. So we are, you know, not that creative. We really build it off their initial campaign. And it's really focused on really education around intimate partner violence. And really call people or support people to take action. Obviously, it kind of focuses on not only identifying, but also calling out, changing, and ultimately stopping intimate partner violence in our community.
Mm-hmm. And the campaign uses photographs of community members holding that message. I was wondering why this approach was chosen and what impact you guys are hoping it has.
Well, we want to make sure that it really feels as something that is, you know, touching everybody and everybody should be part of. So we choose, like, obviously some folks that people might recognize in our community. You know, we've chosen, you know, leaders of different institutions, musicians, artists, but also folks that that work in, you know, certain professions like healthcare, trades, education. So we really wanted to make it like diverse and touch on everybody and hopefully also really create some, I would say, recognition in the community around this and starting a conversation.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned this has started in other cities. I was wondering if you could speak to why it was so important to bring this to Kingston now.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually something that we've been working on over the last few years. Obviously, I work for the City of Kingston, and City Council back in 2023 actually declared intimate partner violence as an epidemic. There's about 100 municipalities that have done the same, and we're hopeful that at some point the province also will take that same approach. So we've, after that, really started to work on how do we bring all the partners together that work on preventing intimate partner violence and also supporting victims and members of the community. And we thought that this campaign would really be a good start to bring this message out in the community in an impactful way.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you've gotten any response, whether it's from folks who participated maybe in taking the pictures or folks who've seen the campaign.
Well, we launched it this week and we've definitely seen some responses on social media. People are really kind of picking this up in a positive way. What we really try to do as well is making sure that there's a link to resources. So if people see this campaign and they may want to learn more, that they actually go to the Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence website, which has a survivor handbook and lots of other tools for people to educate themselves. So yeah, we've overall seen some positive reactions. We've received some questions around resources for all genders. So it's really good dialogue and conversation.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And where can folks find more about this campaign, view all these pictures, and find resources?
Well, hopefully on as many social media platforms as possible. We really hope it's kind of this opportunity for people to share and reshare these photos. But the different partners that have been working on this are the City of Kingston, the Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence Coordinating Committee, Interval House, Resolve, the Southeast Health Units, and the United Way. So all those agencies will have these resources on their websites. But ultimately, we really hope that folks are going to the Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence website, which has all the resources and tools.
Once again, that was Ruth Nordegroff with the City of Kingston on the See It, Name It, Change It campaign here in KFLNA. The working group hopes to expand the campaign to more locations in the coming months. For more information and resources, you can visit kfacc.org. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about a proposed 4.9% tax raise included in the latest TLTI budget.
Thank you, Jesse. Residents in the township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands could see the residential tax rate rise by 4.9% next year under the mayor's 2026 operating and capital budgets, which were presented and approved as received by council during a December 11th meeting. If approved as drafted, the budgets propose a net municipal tax levy of $13.52 million, up about 5% from 2025. For a median assessed single detached home valued at $208,000, the increase would amount to approximately $55 annually or $4.58 per month for the township's portion of property taxes. The draft operating budget outlines $19.5 million in gross expenditures and reflects ongoing cost pressures, with the township relying in part on reserve funds to balance spending. The proposed 2026 capital budget totals $5.3 million, with an additional $1.6 million in carry-forward projects from previous years. Capital spending would be funded primarily through reserve fund withdrawals, including approximately $4 million from capital reserves. The 2026 budget marks the first time the township's financial plan is formally considered a mayor's budget under Ontario's strong mayor legislation. Mayor Karina Smith-Gatsky said she does not intend to use those expanded powers, stating that she is not anticipating doing this budget any differently than council has in the past. Council formally approved the budgets as presented and also waived the standard 30-day amendment period required under provincial regulations, allowing the mayor's draft to move forward without changes. In addition, council approved the 2026 mayor's draft water and wastewater operating and capital budgets. The water operating budget is set for $401,300, the wastewater operating budget at $369,700, and the combined capital budget totals $6,057,300. Council also approved increases to water and wastewater rates in line with a recent rate study, which will take effect with the January 2026 billing cycle. Township officials say the budgets support ongoing municipal services while maintaining infrastructure and meeting community needs. Further discussion and any final adoption of the budgets are expected at the next council meeting in January. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LJI reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about KHSC's expanded treatment options at their detox center.
Thank you, Dinah. Kingston Health and Sciences Center, KHSC, have announced $1.8 million in funding from Ontario Health, which will allow for enhancements at the only publicly funded withdrawal management center in southeastern Ontario. The center, which currently operates as a Level 2 medically supported model, will transition to a Level 3 detoxification site with 24-hour medical services soon to be available on-site. In the last year, the center had roughly 1,200 admissions from over 760 clients, and KHSC expects capacity to be increased by 20% thanks to enhancements being made with the new funding. Most notably, the site will now have a registered practical nurse on-site 24/7 and a nurse practitioner on-site on the weekend to complement the existing weekday NP. The transition will also allow 22 beds on-site to be reclassified as observation beds, mitigating the need to transfer clients to other spaces. Executive Vice President of Patient Care and Chief Nursing Executive Jason Han says the upgrades will mean the detox center will be able to treat more people in-house, decreasing bottlenecks in emergency rooms. With addiction support workers on-site 24/7 as well, Han says allowing for longer stays and enhanced services at the detox center can be helpful for clients working towards recovery. Quote, "Patients that are suffering from addictions need quality care and compassion." In a release from KHSC, CEO and President Dr. David Pecora said taking steps towards recovery can be, quote, "overwhelming," and the Detoxification Center provides a safe, supportive place to start on that path, with new funding allowing a step forward in the support of those individuals. While no official date has been earmarked for when enhancements will be implemented, Han said recruitment of staff is in progress, and the upgraded center is expected to be operational by the end of the fiscal year in March.
And thank you to Owen Fullerton for that story. Now over to the LJI reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story about new mental health supports that will be available to emergency personnel in Loyalist Township.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township Emergency Services announced that they were successful in their application for mental health supports for public safety personnel funding. According to the department, the $25,000 worth of services they've been approved for will play a significant role in increasing the awareness, training, and programming of mental health supports available to all its members. The province has committed to supporting public safety organizations through this grant stream to help with training and programming through a company called Warrior Health. The grant program is part of the Ontario government's plan to help public safety organizations provide access to specialized mental health services for first responders and public safety personnel. Fire Chief Kent Reedman said the funding was the first of its kind.
This is the first type of this of grant that we've seen from the province for this type of support ever in the history of the Ontario Fire Service. So it's an exciting time to see significant changes coming in the mental health support world that our firefighters deserve and need in a lot of cases. So this is a really nice gesture from the province.
Councillor Carol Parks and Mayor Jim Hagedorn shared their support for the program.
I think it's great that they're finally actually starting to recognize that our first responders need help too.
I'd just like to echo that I'm glad to say that they're finally stepping up and making sure that everyone is healthy at the end of the day.
Staff's report noted this is an important part of their current review and modernization of the department's critical incident stress and post-traumatic stress incident program. Staff will be creating a public announcement thanking the province for their support with this initiative. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about a 20.5% budget increase for the Cobourg Police.
The Cobourg Police Service will be getting its full ask for operations next year, but how it will be funded was hotly debated Monday. Mayor Lucas Cleveland's proposed budget would see approximately $1.2 million funded through the police services reserves, depleting that total to around $460,000. This method would only add 1.7% to the town's tax levy. However, Police Board Chair and Councillor Adam Bureau requested the entire $1.2 million be shifted to the tax levy, bumping taxes from 2.7% to 6.08%. He said this would be the corrective budget for 2026, effectively returning to 5% in 2027. Bureau's amendments to the budget was defeated 4-2 with Cleveland abstaining. Councillor Aaron Burkatt then proposed splitting the reserves in half, moving $600,000 to the tax levy. This would increase taxes from 2.7% to 4.52%. Burkatt's motion would see the other $600,000 moved to next year. His motion was approved 5-2 with Cleveland and Councillor Randy Barber voting no. Following a 30-minute morning break, Police Chief Paul Vandegraaff fielded councillors' questions.
20.5% is the natural increase. This is the correction budget. There is nothing new in this budget.
Cleveland took issue, accusing the police board of not saying no to Vandegraaff or having little pushback on certain budget requests. He wanted the police reserves to fund this year, essentially moving major funding decisions to next year, when there will be a new councillor, new police chief, and new police board. He remarked that over the past 4 years, the police budget has drawn approximately $9.8 million from the town's business funds.
But it moves it down to a line, hopefully to a board that is going to be willing to actually push back on chief and staff's requests.
Cleveland opened the meeting stating that Cobourg is at a crossroads where taxes keep going up and the affordability crisis remains a high priority for the public. He said he would not use his strong mayor power veto to override the will of council, opting to allow them to decide the final outcome of the budget. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the week. Thursday, December 25th, Christmas Day. Here in the city of Kingston, we have got a daytime high of 4 degrees with a 62% chance of precipitation, only dropping down to 2 degrees overnight. Friday, December 26th, Boxing Day. Colder here in the city of Kingston, daytime high of 3, feeling closer to minus 3 with the wind chill, dropping down to minus 6 overnight, and with a 67% chance of precipitation, that means we could see some icy conditions early Saturday morning. Saturday, December 27th, daytime high of minus 2, with sleet and freezing rain in the forecast for the afternoon, so be careful if you've got some post-Christmas travel planned. And that extends to Sunday, December 28th as well, still going to have that mix of sleet and freezing rain throughout the day with a high of minus 2. And then moving into the start of next week, we have got Monday, December 29th, a daytime high of minus 4, feeling closer to minus 9 with an overnight low of minus 7, a chilly start to the final week of 2025. This is the City of Kingston traffic report for the week. As a reminder, winter traffic parking restrictions are in effect as of December 1st. This means that during December and March, overnight on-street parking will be banned only if the weather and conditions require it, so if it's particularly snowy or icy, but during January and February, all overnight on-street parking is banned, no matter the weather conditions. It is a short list of road closures this week. Aberdeen, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is also closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. And then in terms of other delays, Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catarocway Woods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect those same delays for flood-proofing, traffic reduced to one lane in each direction. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via cfrc.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.